A warning to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. This episode of Away includes the name and voice of someone who has died.
From the Dreaming Festival to the opening ceremony of Sydney Olympics to dance rides, the Boomerang Festival and beyond. When it comes to First Nations arts and culture, Widjibal Wibal woman Aunty Rhoda Roberts was a creative force. One who touched the lives of so many of us. To her closest loved ones, she was known as Our Rhoda. Honestly, she had a way of making everyone feel like a loved one. Her generosity of spirit and staunch sense of custodial care reached further than almost anyone I've ever met. In thinking about how to honour Aunty Rhoda, I keep coming back to the last time I recorded her. We were in the remote Northern Territory community of Mutitjulu for the 40th anniversary of the Uluru Handback. She was actually there with NITV, and she agreed to speak with me about her connection to the rock, which stretches back to being at the Handback itself with her father in October of 1985. That's not the bit that stuck with me, though. It's what happened after she finished her message. As I was fumbling to turn off my recording equipment, we talked about this funny little thing we have in common. This show that you invite into your home, your car, your art studio, your walk around the neighbourhood. Aunty Rhoda spoke to me about Away, the way I speak to artists about their creative pursuits. Because she saw art in the crafting of Away. And she's always celebrated and valued both art and artists. I'm not the only person to feel this way. Lorena Allam is a Gamilaroi and Ualarai woman and one of the producers working on Away alongside Aunty Rhoda in the early 2000s.
Of course, she was already a superstar in my eyes when we had the opportunity to work together. She rang me up out of the blue one day wondering if Away would be interested in having her contribute to the show. I mean, who would say no to Rhoda Roberts? I said, yes, and I asked her, would she be our presenter? Who better to helm a show about Indigenous arts and culture and with such a beautiful voice for radio? She was always so passionate about uplifting all our forms of creative practice, and she was always looking to find new ways to tell our stories. She was especially driven by wanting to show the world that our cultures were alive and vibrant and thriving. Rhoda was always creating. She was writing, acting, performing, and when she wasn't doing, she was always thinking about the next creative endeavour. She was a powerhouse. I loved working with her. I loved yarning with her, and she could tell the best and the funniest yarns and act out all the parts. We used to laugh all the time. It's a wonder we got any work done. She loved her people and her culture, and she devoted her life to helping us shine. Her legacy is immense. And that's where the words run out. We will miss you, our beautiful sister, resting with the ancestors.
Reflecting on that time for Away's 30th anniversary, Aunty Rhoda spoke about how much she admired Lorena and Ursula Raymond, joking that she was terrified of their intelligence and artistry when bringing a story to life on air.
What they did was not only give a new narrative on a national broadcaster, they were providing information that was obtainable that didn't enable guilt. It actually enabled the dialogue and the discourse. And we started to see and hear from our listeners. And there were more and more non-Indigenous people tuning in.
Speaking with Away this week, Ursula had this to say about Aunty Rhoda.
Rhoda Roberts was the most amazing, the funniest, entertaining person I have ever known. For such a tiny person, you lit up the room wherever you went. You told the biggest and best stories. You acted them out. You had everyone rolling around on the floor laughing. You know, the stories that you had and from the experiences that you had from, you know, throughout your whole life. We had such fun. You, Lorena Allam and I working on the Away program at ABC Radio National. There, you know, the staff loved you. You told them stories. You know, you just connected with everyone. You connected with everyone. And it was such a pleasure to know you, to work with you, to love you and to you and your family. God, it's going to be weird. Well, it already is. It's weird that you're not there, Rhodes. So love you, miss you, and see you in the dreaming.
Ani Rhoda's career in media is almost as varied and wide-reaching as her career in the arts. She was the first Aboriginal person to host a primetime television show, Vox Populi, which aired on SBS.
And bless my brother Stan Grant, but I've been by, I think it was 10 months.
But as she explained to ABC News in December last year, she wasn't shy of taking the opportunities that came her way, like her landmark role at the Sydney Opera House.
I was very fortunate to be offered a position as head of Indigenous programming through the CEO, Richard Evans. And of course, Jonathan Bilski was my boss, a great guide. And we commenced on that journey, and it was the first institution arts organisation in the country that we looked at developing a rap. But it wasn't a rap about tick the box and see what you can do. It was actually looking at a rap of how we could use it for our advantage. And that really did occur. And I think when Richard left and we got Louise Heron, extraordinary. Just so many things that we were able to achieve here where there was no resistance. And it really was change-making. And I'm thinking of things like Bardud Gili, Dad's Rights, various things we've done at the house that has given us a voice, a platform. But having that head of programming, which many performing arts venues around the world, particularly in America, Canada, New Zealand, have copied that model. So that really says something. And when you've got a budget and you've got a platform, you can get the best in the country. So I don't know about my own creative excellence, but I certainly know the opportunities I've had to work with our mould across these sectors of the creative industries that shine a light on the enormous diverse talent we have. It's incredible.
Salua Middleton is the head of Indigenous audio here at ABC, but she remembers working with Ani Rhoda at the Koori Mail almost 20 years ago. She says Ani Rhoda's determination to open doors and keep them open so people could develop their own work is something she deeply admires.
She was just always inspiring in the fact that she worked with such authenticity, you know, throughout my career as a journalist. Ani Rhoda, you know, had many different projects that she was a part of, and she always had a door open for me if I wanted. You know, the biggest impact that she had is that, you know, you create and hold those spaces open for people to walk through, and that has inspired, I guess, what I hope to do is make sure that there is that space. Not necessarily creating that space in every instance, but making sure that there is space for others to come through that door, to succeed, to share their stories, to share their voice, to share their knowledge, to share their authority. And I think that's like such a big impact that she's had on me and the lens in which I work and walk through the space as I do.
Ani Rhoda always said she learnt this from her parents, but they were big believers in what she called service to community.
So when I went to Sydney to do my training as a nurse, my father asked me, what was I doing for my people? What was my volunteering? And I went, oh, geez. So I ended up volunteering at Radio Redfern. And Tiger Bowles actually taught me the desk. And I ended up doing a few shows where I taught myself how to make radio documentaries. And it's funny how things like that, it's all meant to be, really. Next minute I was offered a job by a doco I made, which I thought, well, no one's ever going to want me, because I gave people a bit of a hard time with that. And ABC offered me a job. And that's how I got into the broadcast sector, like sort of the mainstream, although we were doing Deadly Sounds for 21 years and things like that. But everything had a purpose. I did Deadly Sounds because we had no radio network in the country that would give Aboriginal artists national airplay. So we decided to create it ourselves. I have been so blessed. You know, every day you get up and you go, oh, geez, I have to go do that. Whereas in fact, you've got to actually remind yourself, I have people across the country, our senior boss men and women, who coldly trust me with their stories, they trust me with their art. That's pretty huge. And I get to work with that every day. When I think of my grandmothers, when it was outlawed, they couldn't sit down and do what we do. So I think that's really special. And perhaps it's the reason why I went into the arts, because I can tell you right now, certainly didn't go in it for the money.
As Arnie Rota saw it, what you put out into the world, you get back. It's not hard to see how that principle has played out again and again throughout Arnie Rota's life. Speaking with Kim Walker, the CEO of NASDA Dance College, earlier this year, he praised the way Arnie Rota created opportunities for artists at all levels of their career.
Arnie Rota is one of the most inspirational people I've ever met. You know, she has changed the cultural fabric of Australia with her passion for the arts, for her passion for culture, for her passion for culture in the contemporary sense of moulding things together from traditional and contemporary. And she's an inspiration. She has given so much work to so many of NASDA alumni through the years and taken them on and taken their, you know, listened to them and their dreams and their passion. And she's embodied that and taken that into her festivals, into her works with Vivid, so many areas of, you know, through the Sydney Opera House when she was there, festivals all across Australia. You know, The Dreaming is still one of my favourite festivals of all time. And, you know, she's just been a beacon and will remain a beacon for Australia, you know, contemporary Indigenous arts practice for a long time.
Dr. Jackie Huggins is someone else who got to know Arnie Rota well over the years. Whenever their paths crossed, it was joyous. Jackie says she's always admired Arnie Rota's energy, tenacity and gift for having respectful and wise conversations.
I clearly remember her when she was doing the Woodford Festival, particularly up in Queensland. And at that stage I was going along to them every year. That was such an enormous job, you know. I never really recognised how big it would be. And then she went on to greater things like the Opera House, Sydney Olympics and so forth. She did a whole range of wonderful stuff. She's such a perfectionist because she wouldn't go through with a show unless she'd ticked off, you know, all the boxes, and that she did very well. She was always in command of the situation and, you know, just had all the angles, all the bases covered. So it made it for really smooth, smooth-flowing operations for her, even though I know that at times she would have struggled and been so under-resourced with a lot of the festivals and the work that she did. But the love of it, you could see it. You could see it in her eyes and you could see it in her body in terms of the way she moved and was able to work with people and bring them on. And that really didn't matter to Rota, I don't think. I think she, wherever she walked, you know, she made such an impact on people's lives. She could do anything, really. She was a great performer in many senses, and look, I think she will go down in history as one of the true greats of all time, and you know, we will love and cherish and remember Rhoda as that person that was so proud of her identity, so deeply embedded with it, you know, such a beautiful public performer. But also underneath all that was this deadly Koori woman who loved her people, her family, her community. And, you know, she leaves, like all of us, I'm sure, you know, we leave some legacies in our life. But you know, Rhoda Roberts was Rhoda Roberts, you know, a powerful, strong Bundjalung woman who we all looked forward to and up to. And, you know, she's a great friend and, you know, she never gave up either on any of her quests around activism in the arts and media as well. So rest in peace, my dear sister. Always loved you. And I hope that you will now wait for the rest of us to come up and see you. What a muli, what a baiduru, my sister.
You're listening to Away on Radio National.
I'm Daniel Browning, a former presenter of Away and The Art Show on ABC Radio National, and a long-time employee of the ABC, now at the University of Sydney, where I'm Professor of Indigenous Cultural and Creative Industries. My memories of Rhoda go back a long way. We worked together very closely on when she was presenting Away. One of my jobs was to, you know, write scripts for Rhoda and also, you know, editing her interviews. And I just remember what a great rapport she had with everybody. Now, Rhoda knew everybody because everybody knew Rhoda. When I first met her, I remember being a bit overwhelmed by the fact I was meeting Rhoda Roberts. But she was so down to earth. She had such a great sense of humour, like a real blackfella sense of humour. Her interviews just ripped me. Like, she just had not just rapport with her guests, you know, many of people which, you know, whom she knew professionally, but she just had this kind of really incredible gift for seeing the comedy in things. I think, I don't think she acknowledged this, but I think she did. Rhoda was, you know, not just a colleague, but also, you know, a friend. And aside from, you know, our work together, she would contact me every now and then to get me to do things. She was, you know, like when she created the Indigenous program of the Byron Bay Writers Festival, as it then was. But one thing that I'll never forget, that she an opportunity she gave me, which kind of goes to who she was. She was a person who can. She was a connector. She was a person who saw the talent in other people, who identified that talent and then sought to bring them in and sought to get them, you know, bring more opportunities their way. She was that kind of person. She was pretty selfless. She approached me in, I think, 2022 to be one of the Bundjalung recipients of a mentorship through NORPA, the Northern Rivers Performing Arts Company. She was very much in this latter part of her life coming back to the North Coast, coming back to Bundjalung country to share her expertise and to really support and nurture whatever talent she could find in our country. Of course, she found a lot of people. But I was living on country because I'd left Sydney because of the pandemic. And I was living in Ewingsdale, just outside Byron Bay. It was there that, in responding to this offer to be part of this mentorship program, which would involve a play reading of a work that I was going to write. I mean, we were allowed to imagine anything. We had to basically come up with a piece of performing art, a piece of performance, essentially. And I'd never done this before. I'd never written a play, but I thought, I'll write my first play. It was meant to be, it was a two-hander, very short, 15 minutes, you know, bang, bang, bang. I mean, I was so proud of what came out of that mentorship and her support. And you know, I remember vividly when we went around the table and we all basically gave a rehearsal in front of Rhoda. And she just, yes, it's yeah, it goes to what kind of person she was. She just said, oh, just brilliant. You know, she just said, "That's Daniel, that's brilliant." One thing I'll never forget is how she ran my name. She called me Daniel Darling. And she would say that like it was my name. Not Daniel Browning, but Daniel Darling. And I'll never hear that again. That's a sad thing. One thing I wanted to also mention is like all the plaudits that she's received since her passing, many haven't mentioned that she was a presenter of Away. You know, Nor Pachama, you know, the Light Festival in Alice Springs. And also, you know, an original cast member of Radiance, the Luinara play. Extraordinary play, which later became a film directed by Rachel Perkins. She did so much. She was so hardworking. Don't forget the Festival of the Dreaming. This is in the 3 years prior to the Sydney 2000 Olympics. So there was productions of Black Mary, of Midsummer Night's Dream, a bunch-long version of Waiting for Godot. Like, these things that Rhoda thought up became real. She made things real. She made things manifest. We've all benefited from Rhoda's vision over the years. Her vision for Indigenous art, Indigenous culture. It was like she was conducting a silent mass opera, you know? And we all knew because we were singing in the opera. But I guess to the rest of the Australian community, perhaps it was silent in many ways. You know, she believed in us. She believed in our culture. She believed in our cultures. I just think it's an incredible loss. And we'll never see another like her. But I'm so glad that we did.
Daniel's right to shout out Aunty Rhoda's role in the 1993 seminal family drama Radiance. Her performance as Nona, the youngest of the three sisters, was, by all accounts, iconic. But more than that, after many years, Aunty Rhoda, along with Lydia Miller, were finally credited for the work they did in developing the script, along with non-Indigenous playwright Louis Naura. This was one of the many yarns that came up when Aunty Rhoda joined five First Nations women at Yirrumboy Festival last winter for a feast like no other. One in which they enjoyed a meal together and discussed their lives and careers in front of a live audience. Their conversations were candid and raucous and displayed the kind of deep love that grows out of a respect for each other's craft and cultural integrity. Murawari woman and Mughalan Performing Arts Company's co-founder, Lily Shearer, says that night largely came about thanks to Aunty Rhoda.
Rhoda was the glue to that panel because she knew everybody on the panel. She had worked with us all. And she'd seen us at our best and she'd seen, well, me anyway, at my worst. I met Rhoda years and years and years ago. My daughter actually danced in the first Dreaming Festival in 1997. She was a teenager in the lead up to Sydney Olympics because Rhoda did all those festivals from 1997. And then after Sydney Olympics, she was doing the Dreaming Festival out at the Sydney Olympic Park. And I turned up there to do my gig with a black eye, domestic violence. And I was really raging and swearing, you know, not publicly, just privately to her. And I'm like, oh, I'm really sorry, you know, I'll throw your ochre on. And she said, breathe. Just breathe. You're a brave woman to turn up like that. You're even braver that you're going to get on the dance floor and dance with him in a minute. And I just went, oh, what am I doing? And there was a shift. Rhoda challenged me of how I was living in a really beautiful, non-judgmental way that Rhoda does. And that changed me. That changed the way I made choices. It changed the way I worked. I split up in a relationship as well as a business with that young man. And my life changed for the better of my kids and now my 13 grandchildren. So, you know, you've got to think about how it affects the children and the grandchildren. So I thank Rhoda for that. And, you know, she's our goddess. She's left a legacy that we're all enjoying, that we're all making money from, that we're all trying to build this economic empire together. And that's the way we've got to think about it and continue to work together because that's what Rhoda did. She pulled us all together. And not just in Australia, but those relationships that she brokered across the oceans, we still stay connected. You know, I still talk to Denise Baldock, and Rhoda didn't just talk the talk. A lot of people out there just talk the talk, especially in our industry. But Rhoda walked the walk, and she taught me how to walk with pride and with love in my heart to make better choices for me and my children and my grandchildren. Love you, sister, always.
Aunty Rhoda's legacy of care and respect is one that so many have been touched by. Whether you came to know her through her work in the media, in the arts, in community, or simply in life. And I know that for so many people, there's a desire to honour her legacy in the only way we can, by continuing to carry it forward, taking the opportunities that come up, making new ones when we need to, and always working in service to community. Aunty Rhoda, in thanks for your drive, your generosity, and your cultural leadership, I thought I'd give you the last word. This is an excerpt from Away's 30th anniversary episode back in 2023.
Hi, my name's Rhoda Roberts from Bundjalung Country up there in the north, and you're listening to Away on ABC Radio National.
Hi, my name's Rhoda Roberts, and I'm from Bundjalung Country up there in the north, and you're listening to Away on ABC Radio National. I obviously had some voice lessons since then.
So that was 1992 or 1993,
yeah, I was
Rhoda.
A baby. you know, and I think it was just, yeah, I sound like I'm 16. Goodness.
Do you remember making that recording for Away?
I can remember at the time nearly every radio station was starting to do idents. And so I do remember doing Aitken FM for Karma Radio and, you know, Radio Redfern and Bama Bipra and various others. So I think it was a real trend at that time. But I sound very excited, which is good.
You do. And then, of course, a few years later, really, you would then go on to become one of the presenters of Away.
And that would never have even crossed my mind because in the early 90s, I'd just finished a film actually with David Gopalil, Until the End of the World, and there was Ernie, Uncle Jimmy Little, Kylie Belling, Justine Saunders. It was fantastic. Bart Willoughby. It was amazing. And so I had quite a focus on being an actor.
So then what drew you to Away?
Two of my great colleagues, Lorena Allam and, of course, Ursula Raymond, were both working on the show. And I really can't remember how it happened, but they went, hey, do you want to present this? And I was blown away because obviously, yes. And I'd been doing a lot of radio because I was doing Deadly Sounds for quite a period of time. And I'd also had all those years at Radio Redfern in Cope Street in the old Black Theatre. So this was just wonderful.
I've been trying to kind of reflect on the role that Away has had
in the development of the art sector and particularly First Nations art? I mean, you're someone who has had an extensive career in black arts. Away's marking 30 years. What role do you think that we're playing?
I think what Away did, and particularly when we think, one, it's an Arrernte name, but two, so we were using a language name. I think we were shaping a new narrative. We're actually hearing stories, and our guests were very comfortable in the studio. They were familiar with people. Our reporters were out there on the ground, very face-to-face, very much at that community level. And that's what I love about Away. You know, the artists that came on this program and our guests were major stars. But when we talked to them, we were still sitting in their communities that they belong to. And just because of their success doesn't mean they're a less community person.
Who've been sort of some standouts for you?
Of course, we've had major stars. I got the opportunity, and having had worked with the late, great David Gulpilil, of course, and hearing his story. And when we look at the films he has done, oh my goodness. And when I look at that image on Tracker, there was always that stillness and presence. But in that film, wow, you see the custodian of country. And then you see the humour in Charlie's Country. And that's what I love, blackfellas and humour. But I think also when I talk about our greats and our stars, I mean, everyone's a star. Everyone will become a custodian or an elder of their country or a traditional owner. But I do reflect back on the number of elders and custodians we had who imparted such great knowledge, but with such generosity. And often at times their stories were very painful to hear. You'd be a bit teary. But the level of forgiveness they had is quite extraordinary, and I don't know if I could ever achieve that if I'd had their lives. So it was a great platform as well to hear from our old people, to hear from those lived experiences, and to grasp a story that you never would have entered your mind. And I reflect on Auntie Joan Cooper. And I met her in the Blue Mountains, and she took me to the mission that she grew up on. Now, the labels that have been attached to her life was, oh, she's a Westie. She's living in poverty. She's one of those Western suburbs. And in fact, this was her country. She'd never left her country. But some of the stories that she told, and of course, she grew up in the 30s on this mission in Western Sydney, the Blue Mountains, absolute poverty, but also the cultural elements that we'd never given any regard to the city. We're all there. They were just being unearthed. And she ended up writing a book to tell those stories, I think, which is a really important document, because often people will come into city environments and just assume that there aren't those living stories still, and we do need to hear them. And it certainly woke me up. But I think the great thing, I'd met Auntie Joan earlier. During the Olympics, we had the absolute pleasure of inviting 345 plus women from the APY lands and 21 communities, and they really wanted to come. So we brought them in a few days early and all the rest, and there was quite a group, particularly of some of the senior ladies, who wanted to go to the Blue Mountains. And so we took them there, and they sang up country, they called out. And, of course, we were taking them, and Auntie Joan was the host. And the call back was quite extraordinary. It was the same song. Now, how did these APY women and this Darug woman know the same song? And the story was, Auntie Joan thought about it, and she said what she believed and what she'd been told was the song had always been there, but when they saw the onslaught and what was occurring, they gave it, and obviously they must have had a song line or something like that to that country, so they gave it to that mob to keep it alive, to safeguard it. So when the time was right and the outlawing of languages had ceased, they could then bring the song back and sing it. So that's a pretty special story about Sydney.
I think sometimes there's this perception that when you are covering the arts, that it's going to be a simple and easy story to tell, like a fluff piece. But one of the real difficulties is ensuring that you create space for people to tell their stories.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right, Rudy. There's so much complexity to not only individuals, but their families and the stories. So it's not like you can just come and do an interview, because at the back of your mind, you know, you're representing not only your family group, but indeed, you know, proudly your nation. And so you have to ensure that you're giving the right messaging as well. And I do think of someone like, particularly our men and women from regional and remote areas where the complexity is so deep and so big because of the protection of cultural stories and matter and so forth. So if you think of someone like David Goldblum, and if you are reminded of the complex kinship system that operates in Northeast Arnhem Land, the Dua and Yiritja. So actually you're framing all that in the way that you ask him. You're doing that research to ensure that you're not crossing the line with cultural matter there. And also an interesting thing is that particularly when that depth is required in a different way to, say, doing the political investigative interview or indeed interviewing one of our politicians or an ATSIC member or whatever. They're there with a purpose and a message and, you know, an agenda usually. But, you know, interviewing someone like David, you're very aware of where you fit in that community as well. And, you know, there are some things like secret sacred knowledge or men or women's business that he simply cannot talk about. And so it's making sure you do that research, I think, which adds another layer. And you're really on edge in a way, but you've got to make them feel so comfortable because you can see you're asking them a question in English. It goes into their mainframe brain computer, glitch, 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 and they are literally translating it into Dul Namata. Then they think about it. And then they're able to speak about it because often the English words aren't translated in the same way or have the same meaning. And, you know, how many words do we have for wind or, you know, in our languages? There's a very different approach. And I think the beauty is with the way, and particularly all the reporters and the amazing team that have worked on this show, they understand that perspective, and so they allow for the silences, they allow for the waiting, which is really, really beautiful. And it does show our style of reporting is slightly different. They'll still go for the jugular as well if you've, you know, got an agenda and you're making your promises and you haven't delivered, of course, then we will unwrap the political, because everything in our lives is really political, you know. And I think of the humour all the time, so a way for us to escape that judgment in a way is to have, we layer it with the humour, the dry wit.
Nambala, lianta, wiriada. Lirianta Wiriara Lianua. Wale Wale Amo Lirianta Wiriara Lianua. Wale Wale Amo Lirianta Wiriara Lianua. Wale wale amo, lere anta wiriara, ia nyua. Ko wia.
That was Shelley Morris and the Borroloola Song Women singing Wali Wali Yungu.